This is Armand DeMille with you at the Positive Mind WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to lead a more positively minded life. What does that music tell you? November marks the start of both the holiday season and what could also be called the perfectionist season. Yep. Although holiday celebrations vary, some are starting tonight, conditions are perfect for one personality trait to emerge forcefully. Yes, if you're of one personality type, this is your time, the perfectionist. The desire for everything to be perfect. Serving the perfect meal, hosting the perfect family gathering, lighting the perfect candles, or showing off the perfect children. Perfectionism can be exhausting in extreme forms. It may also be hazardous to mental health. Various studies over the years have linked perfectionism to obsessive-compulsive disorder, perfectionism to mood disorders, anxiety, depression, you know, everything. Perfectionism has also been investigated as causes of insomnia, irritable bowel syndrome. Now, a new study suggests that perfectionism may at times arise in reaction to indirect aggression. So we're beginning to understand perfectionism. And why now? Why do I bring this up to you now, my friends? Because you need a second look at it. It is now, during this holiday season, that people get crazy with details. I saw a couple of young people the other day, young meaning in their late 20s, early 20s, mid-20s, some one of those 20s, and they said, what are your plans? I said, and they were going to have a wedding. We're going to have the wedding outdoors. What if it rains? Well, then we'll deal with it then. Well, what are you going to serve? Well, we're going to get this food from this place, my local restaurant. Have they ever catered? No, they never catered before. I loved the freedom of this couple. The freedom to mean that whatever will happen, we'll be flexible with. We'll move with it. But you see, when your bones grow old and your mind grows old, you tend to want to guarantee things because you're not as flexible, because he can't move as fast, because he can't change as fast, because if suddenly the plane takes off without you, you don't know what to do sitting around an airport. So you get there 4 hours ahead of time. Nope. It seems that perfectionism grows with age, and it grows with repressed hostility. That's what we're going to talk about today, and we're going to talk about perfectionism, especially when it comes to holiday times, because nothing will ruin a holiday meal more than a perfectionistic preparer. No, you sit there, you sit there, do sit there, did you move that? No, the salt goes over there, the pepper goes over there. Oh, my God, you can get crazy from that. Do you ever sit down at a family meal where you feel like a prisoner? Don't move. Nope, we got to say grace. Right? Nope, don't. Right? Not yet. No, everything controlled. The fork goes on the left. Don't you dare use that big fork for your salad. Well, anyway, that kind of crazy, right? Crazy, yes, on one hand. Beautiful on another. Perfectionistic beauty is exquisite. We all appreciate it in art. We appreciate it when we see things, when we see a Christmas tree, like a Christmas tree. That's perfect in shape and form and lighting. You know, it's something beautiful about its beauty. There's something beautiful about a beautiful, perfect winterland outside when the snow falls and you look out at the perfectionism of nature. We love it. But when you become the person who's creating it, When you become the person who is creating the perfectionism, you tend to spread a certain amount of hostility around. That's what we're going to get to today, and you're going to understand. So, they found that perfectionism may at times arise in reaction to indirect aggression. A largely female type of social bullying, rather than physical bullying. Right. Efforts to pin down perfectionism over the years have been, well, it's been less than perfect. The debate continues about how best to define this personality trait. Two perfectionistic scales are used. They use these two different scales. The Frost, multidimensional perfectionism scale, or the FMPS. This one accesses six specific aspects of perfectionism, which are the following. Concerns over mistakes. How are your concerns over mistakes? Your personal standards. Your parental criticism. Your parental expectations. That means what your parents expected of you. And doubts about actions. And doubts about organizations, believe it or not. These were all part of the perfectionistic qualities. And they judge those. They judge how you rated on those. And then there's the other one called the FLET Multidimensional Perfectionism Scale, which measures three personal and social traits. Self-oriented perfectionism. Now, this is where you set high standards for yourself. Are you a self-oriented perfectionist? You set high standards for yourself? What do you do on the treadmill? What do you do when you work out? What do you do when you do your brain-mind program? Don't you set standards for yourself? All right. Then there is the socially prescribed perfectionism, which is thinking other people are expecting you to be perfect. It's the one where you project to the outside, the socially prescribed perfectionism, which is thinking other people expect things of you, so you become perfectionistic in response to other people's demands of you. So let's say you're an office manager. As an office manager, you think your boss demands perfectionism of you, but when you're at home, you're sloppy, you don't care, nobody's there to demand anything. You sit there and you play with your cats. And then there's an other-oriented perfectionism, which is having high expectations of people. Other-oriented expectation is where, now this is one that's brutal. I can't tell you the number of people I've met who have perfect, who had dated these people and they find something like a mole on their body. And that's it. That's enough reason to get rid of them. That kind of perfectionism goes with a certain kind of personality. Okay. A guy named Don Hamacek, 1978, he suggested that perfectionism could come in two forms. The neurotic one, which was characterized by excessively high standards and driven by a fear of failure. That's one. And the normal version, which he called it, which said reasonable standards and feeling of satisfaction. Well, then they did some research and asked people who were the neurotic type, were theirs reasonable, and they all thought theirs were reasonable. See, so it's very hard to judge by yourself whether you're neurotically perfectionistic. I could ask you the following. Are you compulsive? You know, are you checking over and over again? Are you making sure? Do you clean the ashtrays? Remember ashtrays? You think there's ever going to be a day when somebody discovers use for ashtrays, like doing Ikebana or something in them? What happened to those things? Where'd they all go? They all just disappear? Anybody buy anybody an ashtray for Christmas? Perfectionists. Well, okay, perfectionists used to clean out the ashtrays all the time. You go in a house with perfectionists and everybody was smoking because it was in the 60s when everybody was smoking. There was somebody always cleaning out the ashtrays. Now, another glaring example of the craziness that comes around perfectionism is around eating disorders. Oh, let me tell you, Recently, researchers reviewed 55 different papers on eating disorders, and the study suggested that eating disorders, especially anorexia, the one where you can't eat, skinny, you know, that kind of thing, tend to develop in people who are perfectionistic by nature. They found that anorexics have a perfectionistic nature, and it endures even after recovery. Even after the person recovers from anorexia, the perfectionism endures, and that perfectionism is a neurotic, obsessive kind. And if you truly want to cure the anorexic, you cure that perfectionism as well. They learned. Otherwise, other disorders appear, especially around eating. It remains unclear what causes perfectionism to develop in the first place. We don't know. Some evidence suggests that it runs in the family. You know, you got a father who's perfectionistic, and you love your father, you become perfectionistic. You got a father who's perfectionistic, and you hate your father, you become anti-perfectionistic. You become sloppy. You have a mother who's perfectionistic, and you want to be just like her, you become perfectionistic. That's one. Some people say it's even got a genetic component. They say that there are genes and there's a part of the brain. Now, let me see if I could remember. Can you remember the part of the brain that they found among people who were hoarders? The anterior cingulate gyrate. Is that gyrus? Anterior cingulate gyrus. Cingulate gyrus. Showed major activity in people who were organizers and showed little activity in people who couldn't get organized. And they found that certain people who are hoarders, people who got things but couldn't get rid of them, they had low activity in their anterior cingulate gyrus, which meant that if you could stimulate the anterior cingulate gyrus, what would happen is if you could stimulate it either through chemicals or through drugs or through electrodes, the person developed an ability to organize and therefore cleaned out their house and stopped hoarding. So there you are. So there's some physical component, hormonal components, genetic components, parental components. There are so many components. It's like a computer. Isn't that funny? Another view is that perfectionism is a response to environmental pressures and needs to be understood in a social context. Now, this we have to go into this thing called indirect aggression. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Are you listening to me today as usual? I've been meeting some of you recently, and I am so happy and so pleased to meet you. You're such good people. Good folks doing good work in the world. Man came to me the other day and he said, Armand, I know you're not allowed to give me the opinion, but should I kill myself? He's a very unhappy guy, lived a very unhappy life. He said, do you think it would be a horrible thing if I killed myself? When I looked at how deeply depressed he was so long, I wanted, you know, the laws of my profession require that I tell him it's a bad thing. But the one thing I was able to say to him honestly, I said to him, you know, here's the trouble. I said, you're attractive, you're verbal, and you're intelligent. And because you're attractive, you're verbal, and intelligent, people would listen to you. And because you have these three qualities of being attractive, verbal, and intelligent, you're a teacher by nature. Nature made you a teacher. If you're attractive enough, verbal enough, and intelligent enough, you could teach. And I said, the thing that bothers me is, I said, I'm exhausted. I do a lot of teaching, and you're a potential teacher. I said, so you may want to kill yourself down the road, but do me a favor. Would you join the teaching staff of the universe? Get out there and help some people. He took it to heart. So, a study published this year in Aggressive Behavior supports the idea that perfectionism may develop in a social context, and it uncovered this unexpected trigger. indirect aggression. Indirect aggression. This type of aggression involves socially manipulating behaviors such as talking behind someone's back, giving someone the silent treatment, divulging secrets, being nice to someone in private who you're mean to in public. Women tend to engage in indirect aggression more often than men, with the theory being that this reflects the fact that women were not encouraged to be overtly aggressive and must do so in covert ways because it was considered unfeminine to be aggressive. Now, this is a very interesting thing. Here's what they said. Perfectionism comes out of that inability to directly express aggression. So perfectionism is a form of aggression. Isn't that fascinating? That's a fascinating idea if you think about it. Think about the person who's setting a table. They're practically mean the way they're doing it. I was watching something with Ina Garten the other day. You know who that is? She's a cook on TV. She's a chef, a well-known. She's a two in the Enneagram, a giver, and she has people around her all the time, like Martha Stewart, and the people are all gathered around, and she said, now here we are, and we're going to make this wonderful dessert. We're going to make homemade s'mores. And she had chocolate and marshmallow, graham crackers and peanut butter all in one sandwich, and she had these all adults standing around who have made their own s'mores, and they're all biting into this with these big smiles on, and they all had a glass of sweetened wine to go with it. There was so much sugar in there that it would have made your skin crawl. And these people were looking with smiles on their faces, but you could tell the smiles were like sickening little smiles. Because this is the kind of food you feed to children. Babies whose sugar levels can take it, right? And so here are these adults eating this food, not wanting to offend her because she is the bigwig on television. So they're giving her nice, passive smiles while she is perfectly making the perfect s'mores for them to eat. And basically shoving it down their throat. Because otherwise they can't be on TV unless they smile and say, this is good. Well, you see, perfectionism is a form of aggression. But making everything, lining up the ducks, is saying to those ducks, I'm mad at you for getting out of place. Get in line, you duck. To find out whether experiencing indirect aggression might be linked to long-term perfectionism, the researchers at McMaster University asked two groups of college-age women to fill out surveys to determine what type of verbal abuse, physical abuse, and indirect aggression they experienced in grades 3 through 12. They asked the women to answer questions to gauge whether they were perfectionists. The researchers found that the women who recalled experiencing indirect aggression in childhood were more likely to become perfectionists, while the ones who had direct verbal and physical abuse did not become perfectionists. And by perfectionists, we meant neurotic perfectionists. So, the indirect anger leads a person to become a perfectionist. Isn't that fascinating? I think it's fascinating. Now, everybody acknowledges that this may be a faulty study because of one thing or another, but I tell you, my friends, this is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. We're looking at perfectionism, and we're looking at it especially around these holidays. Because at the holiday season, this thing appears. And it's like a monster wrapping the Christmas present. Do you know how to wrap a Christmas present? Wrap a Christmas present so there are no knots. You want to do a perfect present? A perfect Christmas present has double-sided tape so that no tape shows. And then the present has a ribbon that when you tie it, you can untie it by pulling one string. And the whole thing falls apart, so there's no effort. So you're not cutting off ribbons, so the package virtually opens in your lap. That's the perfect package. Then there's the imperfect package, where you take some used old wrapping paper from somebody else's package, put it on, throw scotch tape all around it, and put a stick-on bow. Now, which one is the better gift to receive? Well, the perfect package looks beautiful. But now, what if you give a perfect package that you spend so much time on to somebody who's like a five-year-old kid? What do? They don't see the package. They rip it right off. There goes all your work. You give it to an adult, and an adult will appreciate the package itself. All right. Be careful with achievement, my friends. Achievement is cheap. Perfection is cheap. What's not cheap is being loose. Being loose, being easy, being able to just get by, you know what I mean? Here it is, the beginning of the season, a season that by nature of the closing of the lights, the fact that we have a shorter day and we have lights are less available and sunlight is less available and depression is more available. Don't make yourself crazy by becoming a perfectionist. Be loose. Invite the kids over. Don't have everything in place. Don't have everything timed. Don't say the turkey comes out at exactly 4 o'clock and we have to sit down at 4:30. Forget about it. Let the turkey be cold. It's about the people. The holiday is a celebration of each other with each other. Not a celebration about you and how perfectly you prepared everything. And here's the message behind it. The message is that perfectionism is your revenge. It's your getting even with all these people. Those of you who think you're such a great giver by giving so much to people because this is that time of year. It's not such giving. No, it's your anger. It's you being angry. It's you doing all of this out of your anger. It's you forcing people into a mold. You want to have a nice party? Get some pizzas. Have enough music. Let people have some space. Give them something to drink. Let them make the party. You want to have a different kind of party? Have perfect glasses, perfect waiters, perfect serving, perfect everything, perfect, perfect, perfect. You can even get an entertainer. Right? Which one do you think is going to be the most fun for the people? So this is Armand DeMille. When we come back, I want to talk to you about your perfectionism. We'll be taking calls from you. I'm going to be talking a little more about this. There are recent studies stand up as warning against taking these ideas of achievement too seriously. You know these maxims that we believe in? They sound as if they're written in the Constitution. Believe in yourself. Don't take no for an answer. Never quit. Don't accept second best. Always, you know, be careful with those things. Somebody made them up. Platitudes of achievement are dangerous. It does not allow for the fact that people are imperfect beings. Because perfectionists panic, will blow a fuse when things don't turn out exactly the way they want them to turn out. Purists are very often at risk from mental distress. Sigmund Freud, Alfred Adler, and countless other exasperated parents over the years have looked at their kids and said, take it easy. Don't be so harsh on yourself. Some researchers divide perfectionism, like I said earlier, into these three different types. Risk of, is it self-criticism that you do? What is your perfectionism about? Is it about you? Is it about perfectionism of others? Are others supposed to be perfect? Or are you expecting that people expect you to be perfect? Which is it? This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5. In short, there are people who follow many, there are many people out there who are the perfectionists tend to quote these maxims for success. They tend to have these platitudes on the tip of their tongue. Well, all you got to do, everybody sounds like John Wayne to me, you know. Well, all you got to do is, and, you know, cross that bridge when you come to it. Don't count your chickens before they hatch. These are the platitudes of people who are playing grown-up. But don't take them as absolutes. At some level, we all know that it's possible to succeed after falling short. You build on your mistakes. You know? Well, that's another one of those platitudes. Maybe you don't build on your mistakes. Maybe you make a mistake and you hope you don't make it again. You know, maybe you don't build on it. Maybe you wreck a little bit on it. Maybe you decided that you don't feel like drinking anymore. And then one night you go out and get drunk. Is that building on your success? Nah. So when we get back, we're going to take your calls at 212-209-2900. And then you ask, if you were a kid, when you were a kid, who was a perfectionist around you? Were there perfectionists around you? Who in your family was most likely to be perfectionistic? You see, if you're going to eventually get wise, a perfectionist is going to let go of the belief that you're in a position to judge anything because you're not. If you're a perfectionist, you believe that you have a right to judge what is good and what is bad. And you can judge that about other people and you can judge it about yourself. Not true. You don't have the right to judge anyone, just as they don't have the right to judge you. Somewhere in life, if you achieve this letting go of this perfectionistic goal, you become self-actualized and become wise. You become discerning. You become accepting, hopeful, and often very noble. So perfectionists who have turned into people who are not destructive become very giving, great people. You know, you could become, but when you're crazy about it, you fear that everything is wrong. You fear that there's a big mistake somewhere. There's a bottom line to all perfectionists as well as their anger. There's one thing about them all, which is they believe that they are imperfect. So everything you're trying to correct, the table you're trying to set, the ducks you're trying to line up, it's because somewhere inside you, you believe that you are imperfect. And it is because you're imperfect, you're trying to fix the whole world. So we have the two secrets of perfectionism. Number one, it's your repressed anger. And number two, it's about your own imperfection. And it has nothing to do with what's going on out there. You get your hands on that, my friends, you get controls of that, and you become a major contributor to this world. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we will pick up with your phone calls. I decided to give you a special gift today. My friends, this is a piece of perfection that I love. George Shearing, doing a moment, it never entered my mind, which he did at the same time as he did Eric Satie's Gymnopédie. This is for you. It's a gift. Lay back. Relax. Let it go. George Shearing. I wonder how many times he played that to make it perfect. You know? This is Armand DeMille with you at the Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests. I'm beginning to approach the holiday season and some of the problems of the holiday season. Some of the ways that we hurt each other and hurt ourselves during this season, including the depression that comes in. I'm going to stay on top of it with you. I'm talking about perfectionism and specifically holiday perfectionism. Be careful, my friends. Don't set the stage too stringently. Don't set the stage too stringently, because if you do, people aren't going to have as good a time as if you keep things loose enough and big enough, you know? Give people room to move. Give people room to make their own party, their own space. Independence is nice. Welcome people as they are. Don't ask them to fit into your form. People are not jello going into a mold. They are themselves. Now, meanwhile, one of the things we found, and I was trying to explain a little earlier, two bits of research about perfectionism. One is that each perfectionist, each one of you who are perfectionistic, have two characteristics that are worth exploring. One is that everything that you're trying to perfect, if you can't stand one little glitch, if you have a burn on your table and you can't live with it because you've got to have the whole table redone, then there's probably a burn somewhere in your soul that you can't live with. If there's an imperfection in another person you can't live with, then you probably perceive yourself as imperfect and you hate it. So part of the reason that people spend so much time trying to make the world perfect is because they believe they are imperfect, and they're trying to fix the imperfection inside themselves in the outside world. You just watch. You watch, especially the clergy or the military. I mean, when you see the military who are trying to be so perfectionistic in the way they're lining up the soldiers and getting everything to be in order, do you not think that there's every Marine sergeant doesn't feel like he's some kind of broken toy inside somewhere, that there's something wrong with him? Just see what happens the minute he gets an officer criticizing him. Oh, my God, he shatters. As if he got caught. And so that's one item. And the second item that we discovered, and this is the more recent research, is that people who are perfectionists tend to be the receiving end of indirect aggression and hostility in their social environment, in their families. Sarcasm is indirect expression of anger. Talking behind people's backs, gossip. These are all being nice when you don't feel nice. That's all indirect expression of anger. And wherever you have that indirect expression of anger, you tend to have a person who also becomes perfectionistic. So if you were somebody who are never comfortable expressing your anger, it is very easy for you to express your anger by becoming perfectionistic, especially about things like the holiday, like holiday settings, like making meals. Like, this is your aggression. This is whipping the ponies into shape. You know, I'm inviting you over to dinner. Crack, get here at this time. Whack, don't show up late. Whack, bring this dish. Whack, no, don't bring that dish. No, don't bring those flowers. Bring those flowers. That kind of thing. You don't want to do that. I mean, you do if you're angry at people. Why not? Punish them and make them think they were receiving a present. 212-209-2900. That's the number here. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. Today, tomorrow, I've got a special gift. A guest who's going to be talking about organizing Christmas. Some very interesting things to say. We'll be talking with her. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take one of your calls. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hi. I'd like this show, especially before the holidays. One thing I've been doing, because at times I've tended to be a perfectionist, I found that, I guess it's a Japanese philosophy, finding imperfection in such things as art and pottery, and I try to do that with myself. but you can lapse into looking for imperfection in everything, going the opposite direction. But I've been directing people towards watching a series that I doubt will ever be on TV here, a BBC series, The Century of the Self. And just a perfect example of...
Well, wait, tell me about this, A Century of the Self?
The Century of the Self. It's based upon Freud's nephew, whose name's just gone out of my head. He was the one that developed public relations. And he lived in New York, and the entire series, it's a brilliantly done series. People can watch it on YouTube. And it just shows why we buy all the garbage that we do every single day of our lives, why people's homes and garages are just filled with garbage.
And what is the what's the essence of it?
I think it goes along these lines of perfecting perfection, getting as much stuff as the neighbors, how public relations and advertising has taught us that we aren't perfect. Go out and buy all this stuff to make yourself perfect. Do various things to your body and your appearance. Do various things to your home. Buy a new car. And all these things through public relations.
And how do you teach this? What's your name, by the way?
George.
George, what's your venue?
Well, I've directed people towards that because I found with myself just watching that series, which I had just heard about and had to go online to look at it. After you watch it a couple of times, and I've experimented with people, and I've asked them afterwards when they've watched it, and I've had people thank me for directing them, they begin to notice, they begin to think about everything they've been buying over the years.
And the name again?
Century of the Self.
The Century?
Of the Self.
Of the Self on YouTube.
Yes.
Judge, that's a very nice contribution. Thank you very much. Let's go back to one more thing you said about the Japanese art of looking for imperfections. Describe how that is seen philosophically.
If people think about Chinese art when they've gone to museums, that tends to be the opposite, where everything, all the glazing, all the different artwork, especially the pottery, everything has to be perfect. If it wasn't perfect, it was destroyed. Where the Japanese had the philosophy of looking for the imperfections and appreciating them. And not discarding them. Just a different way of looking at life.
And as we would be looking through, the other day I was looking at a desk, a very attractive desk, and I saw that it had an imperfection on it. And it kind of touched me, because it felt that this was like this beautiful, perfect thing, and here was where it was kind of missed. But on second thought, I said, but this is where the wood took this shape. This is where the wood had its own life. And it was great that they didn't kill it enough to take the imperfection out.
Or a dent that may be on furniture or a desk or on other things in a home where people could look at it differently and say, well, this gives it its history. Don't look at it as being something that has to be covered up or refinished. When you paint something, painting a home, which I was involved with, if there's a slight color of the last paint that had been on the walls or is still there in some little corner or along some edge work. A perfectionist, as I have experienced with friends, would go nuts about that and wanting to touch it up instead of saying, well, that was the history of what the paint was before. Appreciate.
Oh, so you were married more than once?
Oh, no. No, just friends of mine.
Oh, because it would seem like if you had an imperfection, George, what imperfection of yours did you have the greatest challenge in accepting, in personal imperfections?
One of them, I guess, would be academic work, school, just going overboard on studying to the point where memorizing text when it was totally unnecessary.
So you, this is something about you that you see as an imperfection because you were just obsessive.
Yeah.
And you see your obsessiveness as an imperfection.
Yeah.
And so you become perfectionistic about your imperfection, which is perfectionistic. It's very confusing because it's like there you are observing yourself and seeing yourself obsessive, which is a form of perfectionism, and then your perfectionism says, I don't want to be that. You know, so it becomes very hard to accept yourself. How about in relationships? Do you have a hard time in relationships, George?
No longer. Unfortunately, I learned, that was a lesson I learned late in life.
Tell me.
And somebody had taught it to me. Never had family, friends, anybody that ever wanted to discuss it or had any solutions. And I've been teaching people, when you meet somebody for the first time, and I've seen this with all of my friends over the years, them driving themselves crazy, getting in arguments, becoming depressed. I said, look, when you meet somebody, and this goes for friendships too, just not romantic relations. In the first 6 months, absolutely no commitments whatsoever. Look at the person and just look at all of the actions. Forget every word.
Wait, you're becoming a teacher. Is this what you learned for yourself?
Yes.
You learned how not to get involved immediately?
How not to get involved immediately, yes.
And that helped you because by jumping in, you found that you really didn't see the person.
Right.
And that helped you a great deal.
Yeah, I just looked at all their, and I've told them, I said, as insane as it might sound, for if they say they love you every single minute of the day, forget they ever said anything nice. And if they say they hate you every single day, forget that too. Just look at their actions.
Thank you for calling in, George.
Thank you.
Sure. 212. That's really kind of interesting because every time I asked George a question about himself, he told me something he was teaching. Interesting. You know, it's part of the way we get. We get to this point where we try to look at ourselves. Brave man. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, beloved, it's Rashida. How are you?
Hey, Rashida, how are you? How
nice. I am blessed. It's so wonderful to talk to you. I didn't realize I was an undercover down-low perfectionist until in the adult, because I got married really early, so we would have dinner parties, like, you know, in my early 20s, and my younger sisters, I would bring them over to help me, and they told me, like, within the last 10 years, 15 years, how abusive I was, and I was very judgmental.
Well, you were an older sister, right?
I was a fourth child of 12.
Yeah, and you were the fourth child of 12, but who were the three ahead of you?
The three ahead of me was a sister who was probably as judgmental, at least as far as the Wicked Witch of the East.
Yeah.
Who was the only child for 6 years. She said, all I asked you for, Mom, was a brother. Where did all these other people came from?
Right.
So we felt that. So we felt that all the time. So every time she was good, I guess maybe 11 years older than me. So every time she would go as a 14-year-old to the park with her friends, I'd, hey, I want to go. I was like maybe 6 years old or whatever, five. I would just torment her as a little sister. So, and it was a brother who was very passive.
You became the older sister, didn't you, Rashida?
Yeah, I am.
And when you become the older sister, you're the one in charge.
Yep.
And now you're in charge, and you're becoming perfectionistic with your youngins.
Yep.
Right?
That's what happened. And then when I saw it, I was like, oh, snap. I was very judgmental of everybody and myself. So I totally am in line with what you were saying about that.
Yes,
and
what is the biggest thing about you, Rashida, that you had to accept that is a flaw?
That I am perfect in my imperfection.
What do you mean?
That all of it is good. It doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be the straight line because I would teach people how to sew. No, take it out. You didn't get that right. Stitch it correctly. So in my imperfection, that there are some things that are, quote, imperfect. But that's perfect. That is perfect. That's what I really had to get.
That's a long
and no judgment. No judgment.
But you see, Rashida, that's what personality is. Personality is the beautiful weave of the perfections and the imperfections that we all have.
Mm-hmm.
That's why everybody's a different tapestry, you know, a different quilt, because you're weaving these. If you don't have the imperfections, all you see is a nice glazed cover. You know, nice to talk to you, though, especially at the beginning of the holidays. You're going to be celebrating Kwanzaa this year?
Yeah, Kwanzaa is something that we do as a family. We've been doing
for,
about 20 years now. But, you know, we kind of come to one of the family members' houses. I'm not sure who it will be this year. But it's something, it's a very unifying force because now we're all adult and late 40s, mid 50s, and all of our children, it's like 30 or 40 of them. It's amazing.
It's
so amazing. You know, Mom crossed over last year, so we had a great memorial for her. She left on the 22nd, so we had a really nice memory of her this year. We all kind of came together.
Thanks for calling in, Rashida.
Thank you for your contributions, Armand.
Always.
All right.
212-209-2900, Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Armand, this is Richard.
Hello, Richard.
Great show, and I called once before, but I'll be brief. I'm not an expert, certainly, but I think when I was a kid, and probably some extent even now, that I was a perfectionist about things, particularly schoolwork. And I can remember doing my homework and writing it out. And if I did not like the penmanship, I would tear it up and start over again. And I mean, I did that obsessively. And I've come to conclude, and I've gone a fairly long way, you know, from grad school to law school. But I think being a perfectionist is a dangerous obsession because I think for some reason it can lead to failure because you tend to overstress, you know, trying to get it all correct, and that leads to delay and leads to frustration, and you're not as effective as you can be, and you just accept, as the lady just said a moment ago, your imperfections as being perfect in and of itself. So I think it's kind of a self-damning cycle for certain individuals.
And you felt it used to be for you.
Well, I still think, you know, I mean, as a kid, I really felt it. I think now I've come to grips with it, but every now and then...
Well, who do you love the most in the world?
Wow, that's a tough question. I think the correct answer would be I love myself, but I'm not even sure.
Yeah, let's forget the correct answer. What's the real answer?
You know what? Who I love the most? I think my father.
Yeah, good. I thought so. Good. Let's talk about that for a minute. Don't you love your dad?
Yeah. I'm sorry?
Yeah. Isn't he imperfect?
He was.
He was.
But
yet,
he was so special to me. So, I mean, you know, and the things I think, and I'm not going to say he could have done things better because my father was not, unfortunately,
no, he was imperfect.
In the South and was not, didn't have a lot of education beyond high school, but he was just such a, you know what, he was in my corner 100%.
That's an amazing thing, isn't it?
Huh?
It's an amazing thing to know that somebody's in your corner 100%.
Yeah, absolutely.
If there's something I want to know in life, I want to know that I've got people in my corner 100%.
Yeah.
How lucky for you. Did your dad die?
Yeah, and you know, I think that's the
when
one thing I miss today as an adult. You know, I don't have that assurance.
You don't have anybody who you know is absolutely in your corner.
You know what? Maybe that's too harsh. I
know what you're saying.
I'm sorry?
I know what you're saying. You know, sometimes there's only one special person.
Yeah.
And
I mean,
when
there are
that
some people
person
who
is gone...
I'm sorry, I'm listening.
Yeah, and when that one person is gone, it's very hard to believe that anybody else will ever be there.
Yeah. And maybe getting back to the perfection thing, I think some relationships I've had have not been as perfectly supportive as I would have, I was about to say liked, but let's say needed, and as I think I tried to be, so I think that created a situation where I felt a little bit of alienation, I don't want to say rejection necessarily, but not being allowed.
Okay, so Richard, I got a task for you.
Sure.
I want you to go to the person who you spend the most intimate time with.
Yeah.
That could be whether it be a man, a woman, a child, a parent, whoever it is. And I want you over the next few weeks to let them know without telling them that you are absolutely in their corner. Pass on your gift.
Okay.
You know what it's like to pass it on? I mean, even if it's no matter who it's for, let somebody else know that you're in their corner.
Okay.
Because you know what it felt like on the other side.
Absolutely.
Thanks a lot for calling in.
Thank you, Armand. Bye-bye.
Sure. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. So, lay back, my friends, huh? Take it a little easy. Don't Don't be so perfectionistic. You are perfect. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. with a special guest. Time to liven things up a little bit. How about a little Latin music from Finland? That's an interesting thing. Latin music from Finland. Be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. If you want to reach me, it's 212-757-4488 or thepositivemind.com.
Hi, this is Teokasin Ghost Horse from First Voices Indigenous Radio. Has your child made their wish list for the holidays? Is an iPod, Elmo doll, or an Xbox on that list? Do you care to know what's on a Native American kid's list? It's not much. It's simple. This is where we do the thing that helps us sleep at night, knowing we have done our part to make sure children on those reservations are as warm and cozy as you are. Provide a new winter coat, new snow boots, hats or mittens, even blankets, and send them to the addresses provided on changingwinds.org to make sure that they will reach the kids before the weather turns extremely cold. Your new winter clothing, coats, and any contributions you send are tax deductible. Please contact changingwinds.org/warmhearts.
This is Evelyn Andino Rosa, Subscriptions Director for WBAI, with an important announcement for people making donations to the station. Please make sure to use the enclosed envelopes received with your invoices. These envelopes contain our current banking address. That address is Pacifica Foundation, WBAI Radio, General Post Office, P.O. Box 30540, New York, New York, 10087-0540. Again, for those who are fulfilling your pledges through the mail, make sure to use the enclosed envelopes provided. For those who wish to mail in their donations without an invoice, please use the same address. If you need more information, please call us at 212-209-2800. That's 212-209-2800. Another reminder from WBAI, your peace and justice station.